Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. How big a role will video games playable sans console over interactive television? What's the medium's future with or without a metaverse space? Get perspective from Interactive Advertising Bureau Vice President Zoe Soon when she joins me next. BET Plus is running The Reading, a new original movie starring Monique, and the first TV effort of our second guest today, producer, writer, director Courtney Glaudet. You'll hear from him next half hour. And we'll use our final half hour for a review of the 2023 Academy Awards telecast highlights and lowlights on ABC. And we'll learn your reaction to both. Also ahead, Roku's Silicon Valley Bank Dilemma and our classic trivia question. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. I present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Audacy, Podbeam, Player and Player FM, Spotify, and other leading podcast destinations. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Thank you for joining us on this Monday afternoon for the first of three programs this week of the program all about TV's current and future. 44 degrees, light rain on and off today here in the New York metro area. We're expecting more rain, heavier times tonight and into tomorrow morning. We're happy you're with us. We've got some great guests over the next hour, and then in the half hour after, because we're only 90 minutes today, we want you to weigh in on how you thought about ABC's presentation last night, the 95th Annual Academy Awards. We should tell you right now, at this hour, we still don't know Nielsen's initial viewership data for last night's event. And if we do get that data before we leave you today, we will keep you posted. In the meantime, we want to hear from you, both on the Oscars and our guests. So give us a call, and here's the number you use, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. Chat room open for business as well. Use that too. It's SimonApple04 by name. You will find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the program is on the air, you can connect with others interactively by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn screen, and other people will be live and interactive with you. And we'll be live and interacting with Zoe Yu soon here in New York, and we'll get to her and more after these news notes. 1 year ago, Apple TV Plus beat Netflix to the tune of being the first mega-content TV venture winning the Academy Award for Best Picture. That was for Coda. Last night, Netflix came through with two of the top three winners in feature film category: Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio for animated movie, and All Quiet on the Western Front for international foreign language movie. All Quiet went on to win three more Oscars, while Apple TV Plus picked up Best Animated Short for The Boy, The Mole, The Fox, and The Horse. Say that three times fast without stopping. CNN Films also earned the Documentary Feature Award for Novelty. 3 days after your federal regulatory takeover of Silicon Valley Bank, Roku remains unsure if it will retrieve $487 million on deposit there. The smart TV product maker claims the uninsured amount of sub-deposits represents some 26% of its total cash and cash equivalents, $1.9 billion as of 3 days ago. Nevertheless, Roku executives maintain they are in no danger of financial collapse. Now, quickies, CBS will celebrate 50 years of the Emmy-winning daytime drama The Young and the Restless on March 26th. How? An episode set at a masquerade ball in Genoa City, with cameo appearances from previous cast members. There's more CBS activity to tell you about. The network and mega content service Paramount Plus will simulcast Think, See, Do, The Legacy of Pete Carril, March 25th. Legendary Princeton Princeton men's basketball coach Pete Carril, who passed away last summer at the age of 92, will replay the following Tuesday on the CBS Sports Network. Three Pines, the Prime Video mystery series that we covered last fall, starring Alfred Molina, will not return for a second season. As you mentioned, the program ran last fall. We did a story on it, and you can catch that at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, tomorrowbetelevised.com, our website, and many of our podcast destinations. And wrapping this feature on a positive second season note, The Bear, will begin its sophomore run on Hulu this June. Exact premiere date coming soon. And that is news notes for today. Now joining me here in New York, the Vice President of the Interactive Advertising Bureau's Experience Center, Zoe Soon. Zoe, welcome aboard. Happy Monday to you.
Hi, Simon. Happy Monday.
First of all, tell everybody what the Experience Center is and how it fits in with IAB's mandate.
Yeah, so the Experience Center is all about helping brands future-proof. We focus on emerging advertising marketplaces and evolving consumer behaviors to help the industry reach the consumer of tomorrow.
Now, last Wednesday and Thursday, I attended IAB's latest event, which is called Playfront. It's the second year for it, and it's all about encouraging advertisers to do their thing with video games in-game, whether it is putting their logos or stuff about what they're sponsoring on a billboard as people are watching or playing the game, or on the car, or sort of signage scenery. Tell us about how Playfront did and your thoughts post-mortem.
Yeah, so our second year went really well. We had a mix of virtual and in-person attendees. We expanded from one day last year to 2 days this year to accommodate the interest and the extended programming. And we had really good coverage from all different parts of the gaming ecosystem. So we had intrinsic in-game advertisers there. We had, metaverse environment, gaming environments there. So Super Awesome, which is a Fortnite company, and Niantic were there. We also had a lot of the hyper-casual and more traditional gaming publishers like Activision and Zynga. It was a really great event. We also had this year a lot of representation from the gaming influencer space, which was really important to us, so that we're not just an advertising event about gaming, but we're actually bringing together the gaming community, both buy side and creators and sellers.
This year, Playfront on opening day led off with Samsung, who last January, that's January of 2022, announced at CES, the major consumer electronics show in Las Vegas, that they, along with LG, another major smart TV set maker, we're launching a game hub where you can play video games on your television set without a console, a PlayStation, a Nintendo Wii, an Xbox, or a set-top device. You play the game either with your voice or you play the game, whatever you're seeing on the screen, with a joystick or a controller with knobs and buttons and so forth aimed at the screen. They not only were the main feature presentation to start things off, they also were a principal sponsor, and they ran a demonstration throughout both days of what they're doing. What did you think of what Samsung had to say and how they said it?
Yeah, I think it's a great message and will really change the gaming space. So for those who aren't unfamiliar, the Samsung Gaming Hub basically allows you to game via the cloud on any device, just with the control, like Simon mentioned. And this streaming gaming trend will sort of divorce content from platform. And, you know, we're hearing, like, the term is platform agnostic a lot. So simply put, gaming will be everywhere. And that does a couple of things. One, it makes gaming even more of a horizontal behavior. And the second thing it does is sort of the ad resistance on different screens that are not console is lower. So we're sort of going to see that consumer acceptance of ads be a little smoother. I think it's indicative of a large trend that's merging TV, video, and gaming all on the cloud.
Mm-hmm. One of the things we learned going to Samsung's booth, and I went there a number of times over the course of the 2 days, was that when you catch that game hub, which has about 900 to 1,000 games, supplied by Xbox, supplied by GeForce Now, which is NVIDIA's cloud gaming service for smart TV sets and devices, including their own device, NVIDIA Shield, and Amazon's Luna service, that guess what? You can watch Twitch over the television set. You can watch Spotify over the TV set. Do you get a sense that maybe at some point Twitch and Roblox and services like that will become television services?
I mean, I think that's the power of the cloud, right, that you can access your content on any device. And I do think we'll start seeing a merging between the CTV world and the gaming world because of this.
We're speaking with Zoe Soon. She is the Vice President of Interactive Advertising Bureau's Experience Center. They did the Playfronts last week. Coming up May 1st, the 4th, they'll be doing the annual Digital Content New Fronts, which will have a lot to say about a lot of the smart TV content that's happening on smart TV sets and smart device and multi-channel bundles. That's going to be happening here in New York taking place at events all over this fair city. And Zoe joins us live here in the Big Apple this half hour on Tomorrow Televised. Sam, I'm with you live from New York. Good to have you with us. First of three episodes we're doing this week. Give us a call. We want to hear from you, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Last week on this program, we did a number of reports about the move by former NBA superstar Kevin Garnett to launch a venture called Beam.TV. Well, Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, we're not going to have Kevin Garnett, but we're going to have someone who works with him about this venture and another service that's already on smart TV sets and smart devices. His name is Josh Otten, and you will hear him live as our lead guest in an interview-exclusive interview. That is Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Zoe, something else that was interesting to note was that you had a couple of exhibitors that already have some tie-ins to television. There was an exhibitor called Scooty, which is doing rewards for game players in-game, offering merchandise that you could, anytime you play the game, you link into it. They're already working with a project coming out on Prime Video, hosted by Will Wheaton. And you had Enthusiast Gaming, which is already working with Nickelodeon, doing segments of their NFL Slime Time last year. And they're also working with a YouTube project called NFL Tuesday Night Gaming. You got a sense from talking to both of these organizations that they definitely see a big role to play in television.
Right. So your question is, are we seeing the crossover between gaming and TV?
Right. And also the idea of, for example, rewards becoming a part of interactive television.
Yes. Well, in the gaming world, rewarded ads do really well because gamers will usually take the opportunity to watch an ad to get a reward in the game. Gamers also spent over $100 billion last year in games on decking out their avatars and their digital identities. So it is definitely a lucrative market. And I think the crossover between video and gaming is interesting because you're sort of getting a Venn diagram of people's media consumption habits, right? So you're sort of catching them both on their media outlet of choice. And you're also translating some of the behaviors in one channel to the other. So people are probably used to buying things on video, so now we're trying to teach that behavior in gaming, it looks like.
Scooty's situation was very interesting because it's coming at a time when the TV industry is really now looking at interactive commerce, the ability to order products and services through your television set, because now more and more smart TV sets devices through artificial intelligence, audio applications like Siri and Alexa and Google Assistant allow you to use your voice to control how you watch and use and order from the set. So you don't need a second screen, you don't need a QR code or a laptop or a smartphone, et cetera. You just do it, you know, right to the set and everything gets handled. We know Roku, of course, is doing the project with Walmart and now DoorDash. NBC's got Checkout, which they'll be doing a Peacock project called Must Shop TV coming up in a few months. So I thought it was very interesting about Scooty in particular that their effort at commerce within video games dovetails with what TV is doing, what smart TV organizations are doing with commerce.
Yes, and we're sort of seeing this in the influencer space as well, right? You've got the Amazon Live where you've got the influencers sort of almost doing an infomercial on their channel, and this has already taken off in China. Yes, Scooty is definitely interesting. They're trying to be the Amazon of the gaming world. I think they've coined the term G-commerce. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that takes off. But definitely, I would say it's almost akin to shopping in your social feed because you're in a space encountering those goods in a context where you're seeing them organically. So I think that always really lends itself to consumer purchasing behaviors. So if you're playing a game, the headset or the shoes or whatever you might be seeing in that frame could be, or something or a product that's relevant to that game will be available in a tray for you to buy or save later to look at when you're not gaming. So I think that the concept is definitely interesting and makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Incidentally, I want to let all of you know that I have filed two stories about PlayFronts, one about the Samsung presentation and the other about Enthusiast Gaming and Scooty. And you can catch the Samsung story, which was posted today at MediaVillage.com, www.MediaVillage.com. That's the Media Leadership website. And hopefully the second story will be coming up, if not tomorrow, later on in the week. Incidentally, I mentioned LG and their efforts at the Game Hub. Were they invited to present at PlayFronts?
We didn't talk to LG, no. It's an RFP process, but no, they didn't come up.
Mm-hmm. I have a hunch if they've got their Game Hub on, that they will definitely be looked into, or at least they will definitely be interested in coming next year.
Yes, so I would love to chat with them about 2024's show.
Mm-hmm. At your presentation, your opening remarks, you said two things that really caught a lot of people's eyes. Here's the first, and this is an exact quote. Gaming is the gateway to generations beyond Gen Z. How?
Well, if you think about the evolution of consumer media consumption habits, millennials grew up in the home console era, and they now make up the majority of population in the U.S. I think it's about 77% currently. And all the interest in gaming is sort of trapped to this generation because they're not sort of saddled with boomer prejudices against gaming. They weren't closed off to it. They sort of grew up with this medium. If you look at what Gen Alpha and beyond are getting born into, they're getting born into the world of Roblox and Fortnite, these immersive spaces. And these immersive spaces are sort of becoming their virtual playgrounds. Gen Z and beyond, they often go into the game without playing the actual game. 70% of them will go to the game to hang out with their friends and use it as a virtual space and their new sort of 3D social as opposed to a social feed. Gaming is just the start of this evolution to inhabiting both physical and virtual spaces. You're probably aware gaming is the main way to sort of enter metaverse-like experiences at the moment. So that's what I meant by that comment. It's the start of that more immersive, interactive media consumption behavior. And it's a great way to prepare yourself to reach generations beyond Gen Z.
One of the things that a number of the speakers and presenters mentioned over and over again, both last Wednesday and Thursday, was that there is a lot of education that the advertising mm-hmm. community needs to have about the whole gaming environment. Things like to break stereotypes, like only men play games. Women don't play games as much as men. Only Gen Z people play games. And this was like over and over and over again. How much mm-hmm. progress has your event made to try to not only break those stereotypes but eliminate them?
I think just having this event has gone a ways in breaking some of those because there's a place for people to come and hear these messages and connect directly with experts in the space that can tell them and show them real data that bucks these stereotypes. You know, that 46% of gamers in America are female. We spend 13 hours a week gaming. All of these stats they sort of have access to. And then we also make the sessions available on demand for 45 days after the event. So if someone's a buy side, an agency or a brand, they can apply for a code to watch all of these sessions and hear these again. We also launched proprietary research this year that dispels five misconceptions in the industry about advertising in games. So this event has definitely been a platform for us to do further education, though more is definitely needed. Later on this year, we're looking to release a Gaming 360 course, L&D course, which is a 101 to advertising in games.
We're speaking with Zoe Soon. She is the Vice President of the Experience Center at the Interactive Advertising Bureau, the people behind not only the PlayFronts that took place last week in New York, but also the upcoming Digital Content New Fronts, May 1st to the 4th, and the podcast upfront will be coming up the following week, again, here in NYC. And that's where Zoe joins us live this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. If you have a question or comment or many minutes with her, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And speaking of rewards, did you know that there is already a television service that is actually on smart TV sets and devices rewarding people who watch it? Well, it's called Rewarded.tv. And coming up a week from today on Tomorrow Be Televised, we'll have an exclusive interview with its top executive, the chief executive officer. His name is Chris Anapali. That's Chris Anapali from Rewarded.tv, and they've got some very exciting plans for what they're up to. We'll hear about them a week from today, right here, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, exclusively on Tomorrow Be Televised. Zoe, the other interesting statement that you made was this: linear TV is dying. How fast and why?
So I think I also quoted Rashad Tuakalala, who said, live sports is the heartbeat keeping linear TV alive. But if you believe that, and then you look at when the major sporting contracts are set to end, that's about 2030. So if you think that that event is going to have a major impact on an already sort of fledgling media channel, I would put it around 2030 or shortly thereafter, mm-hmm. if you wanted to really specific answer.
So if linear broadcast and cable television is a dying future for this medium, what is the future for this medium? Where does it go? How interactive does it get?
And by this I mean you're talking about gaming?
Gaming and the rest of TV.
I mean, I think the cloud gaming is really interesting because that sort of frees gaming from a specific channel and it can be accessed anywhere. I think mobile is really strong right now. It's about 70% of all ad spend is going to mobile gaming. I think we're probably going to see that. That's probably at the point that it's going to get at it. We're going to see other channels catch up to that more. Mm-hmm. So connected TVs, we're going to see more gaming on that because it lends itself to that big screen moment. PCs will also see that channel grow a little as well.
Yeah. You know, it hit me. We have Apple Arcade from Apple TV Plus, from Apple, which is available on their Apple TV set-top boxes. Mm-hmm. And you wonder, is it possible that maybe in the next year or two that every smart TV set, every smart TV device is going to have a game hub, and things like Netflix, for example, which launched video games on mobile a year and a half ago, when will they make the switch to television?
Right. I mean, it certainly looks like that's the trend, and at some point it's going to become a market share play, right? Like, why buy a certain service if it doesn't come with gaming? It's going to almost be something that comes part like out of the box. With regard to Netflix, I mean, they've been acquiring gaming dev studios. They're definitely investing heavily in gaming, so I have to imagine that that's coming soon. Their mobile first plan is probably there's mobile gaming is a maybe a more popular user behavior for them, or less risky, right? Because that might be their soft launch into trying out how their hand at gaming. Get it right on mobile first before they do it on their main platform. But I would have to say within the next 2 years, we would see that's my prediction anyway, see them come out with something on the smart TV.
Mm-hmm. Zoe, on day two of PlayFronts, you offered a book for people to get called The Metaverse. It was written by a former executive at Amazon Studios, and it snapped up like nobody's business. I have a copy. I've read it. I'm going to see if we can try to get the author on this program in a number of weeks from now. And what was very interesting is that there was a great primer, a great overview of how the metaverse is going to impact all of our lives. And what it didn't say was whether television would have a role as a carrier of the metaverse. In other words, having metaverse applications on the smart TV set, on the smart TV device, through multi-channel bundles. And I'm wondering what you think. Is that a mistake for everyone to think, the only way you get the metaverse is through virtual reality headsets and goggles and glasses? What about television as a player here?
Yeah, I definitely think the metaverse isn't an environment you can only access through goggles or, you know, mounted head displays. I think the metaverse is – it depends on how you define the metaverse as well, right? So it can be anything from that Ready Player One fully immersive space to something where it's, you know, this blending of physical and digital and sort of augmenting this, you're seeing augmented reality overlay digital experiences on your physical world. So I think the metaverse is just any immersive reality that you can enter and that persists when you're not there. And, you know, we talked about cloud gaming and accessing games on your TV. I think that will continue to be the case. TV will be an outlet for these experiences that may be living on the cloud.
Mm-hmm. And the thing is, Zoe, and why I'm bringing up this whole idea of why people are not discussing the metaverse and its TV possibilities is that 90% of all U.S. households now have a smart TV, so a smart TV device. And the prices and the are going down, the capacities, the capabilities are rising. In the meantime, virtual reality is not gaining ground as a marketplace. The helmets, the glasses, and so forth, too expensive, too bulky. It's tough to maneuver. Mm-hmm. And we're also hearing about companies like Sansar, S-A-N-S-A-R, that at CES this year in Vegas, LG announced a partnership with them to develop metaverse applications through their television set. Unfortunately, they did not demo it. They did not come out with a press release afterward. That's a whole other story. And we're also hearing that there may be some other companies out there who are saying, you know what? Because 90% of people in this country have a smart TV set of device, why don't we make the metaverse for them, especially now that augmented reality has become a reality on the Weather Channel. It's become a reality in some local TV stations, the WABC here in New York, and the new weather. And it's also been proven it can work live on the TV set, a la what Meta, formerly Facebook, did with Portal TV, doing augmented reality animation.
Right. So your question is?
So isn't it time, let's say, for more people to really take TV as a serious medium to develop the metaverse, as opposed to just having a small focus on virtual reality and all, whether it's glasses or headsets or goggles, that may not come through as a mass market?
But the TV could serve as just the outlet for, I guess, are you thinking interactive TV?
That the metaverse could become a, let's say, heightened, let's say, warp speed interactive TV.
Yes, that is another way it could manifest. I feel like if you look at the generational evolution of media consumption, the generations that are going towards these things don't really have that reference as TV being the main media consumption channel. They're looking at, okay, what's the new thing, and they're almost not wanting to saddle these experiences with references to old media, if that makes sense. We've got the live chat, and you can, it's almost like esports, right, where you can interact with the person who's playing the game or watch someone playing and interact with the community. That's probably as far as that model has gone. And, yeah, I don't know if it can progress much, because the immersive gaming environment is such a better job of fulfilling what someone needs to when they're playing in those spaces. We actually released a Metaverse for Brands guide at the end of last year that sort of goes through how we're defining the metaverse and the different kinds of metaverse experiences. Like, there's the social metaverse, which is like Facebook. Meta Horizons is the best example there. So social as a space rather than a feed. You've got the blockchain metaverses that run on the blockchain. So Decentraland is a good example there. The gaming metaverse environments that we're all sort of familiar with, that we've been talking about, the Fortnite and Roblox. And then, you know, the AR metaverse environments, which is, you know, Niantic is a great example of that, where you're overlaying digital onto, you're augmenting your physical experience. Yeah, so there's a number of ways. I haven't really seen TV move swiftly enough to keep up with how things need to evolve. And a huge part of the metaverse is it's the co-created internet, right? Like you're not just passively consuming media, you're actively co-creating the environment, the circumstance, what happens to the other characters. I'm just not sure that TV is set up for that kind of content.
We'll definitely see, Zoe. And final question, it sounds like maybe in years to come, Playfronts may very well be as big as Newfronts.
I mean, that's my hope. If you look at the way things are trending and the excitement at the event did mimic early day Newfronts. So, and, you know, we've been talking a lot about cloud gaming. We're going to see that gaming sort of offers advertisers what connected TV does, except it's a lot more undervalued right now. So as that gap closes, I think we'll definitely see the increased enthusiasm and interest.
You want more details about the interactive ad viewer and what it does, including the upcoming digital content Newfront taking place here in New York, all over the place, May 1st to the 4th. Here's where you go online, www.iab.com. That's www.iab.com. And don't forget, if you want to catch my coverage of this year's Playfront second annual edition, which was held last Wednesday and Thursday in New York in a wonderful space near Rockefeller Center, by the way, go to MediaVillage.com. It's www.MediaVillage.com, the Media Leadership website. Zoe Swift, thank you very much for joining us. Congratulations on Playfronts 2023. More great things to come, and it's been a real treat having you on. All the very best to you.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Simon.
You're welcome. Take care. Have a super week ahead. Zoe Soon, Vice President of Interactive Advertising Business Experience Center, joining me here in New York. When we come back, we'll go to Houston, Texas, and we're going to meet a producer, writer, and director who is doing his first TV project for BET Plus. It's on right now. It's called The Reading. His name is Courtney Glaude, and you'll meet him, plus our classic trivia question. And after the next hour, your thoughts about the Academy Awards last night at ABC. That's all coming up after pause, after the bottom of this hour, for web identification. It's the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, tune.com. Together, reaching over 80 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Check out Women Who Rock with Success. Entrepreneur Michelle Gines is the guest. Coming up Thursday on Women Who Rock with Success on BTR, Thursday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 7 a.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, Best BTR is always available 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to our second half hour of Tomorrow Be Televised, Night of Edition, to kick off your week here in March 2023, the week of the Ides of March of the particular month. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. Good to have you with us. 43 degrees at the bottom of the hour. If you have a question or comment for our guest ahead, make a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room. We've got Shabaka Shabik Experience in the room. So use the room, use the phone. Either way, we get to you and we get you involved. And don't forget, coming up after the top of the hour, we will have our special recap of the Academy Awards last night in ABC, how the show went, the highlights and the lowlights, and we want to hear from you about both. So stay tuned, make the call, and let's get your thoughts in the chat room as well. My next guest comes to us from Houston, Texas. He is the producer, writer, and director of BET's new original movie, The Reading. It's his first TV project. Have a hunch that this project, starring Monique and executive produced by Lee Daniels, is not the last. Joining us live from that great Texas city, producer, writer, and director, Courtney Glaude. Courtney, welcome in.
Hey, thank you for having me. How are you?
Very, very fine, thank you. So how did you get in the position to do The Reading?
You know, here in Houston, just building it up, I got me an investor to come in and go half with me, and we wanted to produce it here, so we built the budget for it, had the opportunity to reach out to Monique, got the right connect on her. She loved the script, so she immediately, you know, hopped on the project, so we ended up, you know, independently doing here in Houston at the end of 2020.
And this is Monique's first project of this kind in quite a long time. And, of course, a lot of people remember that you won the Oscar a number of years ago for a wonderful performance in a film called Precious, which was directed by Lee Daniels.
Yes, it was. Yeah. they told me clearly that they, you know, they got projects and filmed a lot. So she was really, really excited about the script that I sent her and the movie that and the creativity that I wanted to go with. So, you know, it was a humbling experience and situation for me that she agreed to hop on the project, knowing that she hadn't been in front of the screen or accepted script for such a long time.
Was there an incident or something you experienced or a friend experienced that gave you the idea for the reading?
So no. So what actually happened was I was watching, if I'm not mistaken, I believe his name is Tyler. He's a medium, and he was doing a medium reading for Bobby Brown. It was on TV. I have no idea what channel it was on, but he was doing a medium reading for Bobby Brown, and I saw him not know who Bobby Brown was. And in the middle of his medium reading, he found out something about Bobby Brown that surprised him. He didn't know that Bobby Brown was Bobby Christina's daughter. So honestly, I just wanted to make that moment made me wanted to recreate that moment in the film where a young medium finds out something about the person that they're reading, and it shocks them as something that they didn't know. And honestly, the movie just created itself after that point.
How long did it take you to write?
Bobby Brown is probably I should give Bobby Brown credit for doing the medium reading as a creative spark for this film.
Hmm. And once you got the idea off the Bobby Brown reading or medium experience, how long did it take to write this script?
It probably took like three to six months. I wrote it and then, you know, fleshed it out a few times. But it really, really kind of just spewed out. It wasn't a hard write. Just did a couple of rewrites on it just to make sure everything lined up and covered up all of it. So I would say like 3 to 6 months.
Mm-hmm. And then from there, how did it make its way to BET Plus and get it produced?
So after the movie was completed, I sent the rough cut back to the executive producers. They honestly just didn't like it. I was told to get in a room with some people that weren't my friends so that they could tell me the truth about the movie. Lee Daniels came to mind. My manager at the time was friends with one of Lee Daniels' mentors, reached out to her. Lee Daniels actually set the meeting up not seeing anything, not knowing anything about it. He just wanted to, you know, help out a young filmmaker. And so when he watched the movie the night before we met, he loved it. And he just hopped on and was like, he just thought I should cut it down because at the time it was maybe like 2 hours and 6 minutes or something like that. And, you know, he's a Lee Daniels. He could get it anywhere. And we had a couple of more offers on the table, but BET were the most excited about it. They wanted to put a great campaign behind it, so I felt more comfortable going with them for my first film coming out. And now it's going to be on the regular BET tomorrow, if I'm not mistaken. It's coming out, I think, March 14th on BET. And now it's on BET Plus, but tomorrow it'll be on BET everywhere.
There you go. You heard it here first. Again, the film is called The Reading, and we've got the producer, writer, and director of this film. It's his first movie and TV effort, Courtney Glaude. Not his first feature effort, I should say, because we'll talk about the fact that he made the leap from short films, which he's done for quite a while. Monique is the star. Lee Daniels, the executive producer, who worked with Monique on her Oscar-winning performance in the film Precious. And Courtney is with us live from Houston, Texas, this half hour on Tomorrow We Tell Life. And you just heard, the program will air on BET tomorrow night. To check your local list for what BET is in your area on cable and satellite. Of course, BET Plus available on smart TV sets, smart TV devices, and multi-channel bundles. And if you'd like to give us a call with Courtney in mind, make that call to 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Again, coming your way Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, we'll have Josh Otten. He is the chief executive officer of the organization that is working with former NBA superstar Kevin Garnett on his new global television network project, Beam, BEMTV, which expects to premiere between April and June of this year. We'll get all the details about that. And another network that his organization is already playing on smart TV sets and devices, very lifestyle-oriented. That's all coming up Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, exclusively here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. In this film, you are making the leap, as I mentioned, from short movies to a feature film. Mm-hmm. First of all, how long have you done short films for?
So I really started jumping into the film and hopping out to try to actually produce myself, I would say around like 2012. So after 2012, I started just trying to complete something when I started with like just starting with short films to kind of get the structure of filmmaking. I never, you know, went to school for filmmaking. So everything was trial and error.
Mm-hmm. And so in making this leap to a feature, what was the biggest obstacle you had to overcome, especially it's not just, you know, you wrote the script, but you also are producing it and you're directing it, so you're like three hats in one.
Mm-hmm. The biggest thing was the time period on really scheduling and the time frame of jumping from like 3 to 5 minutes to 90 minutes. So being able to put a team together that could handle that amount of days. And truthfully, we still the jump from the reading to my next project is a super huge jump. We did the reading in 18 days. So we're already in pre-production for my next project, and we're already scheduled at like 52 days. So it was just a learning curve of trying to tell a completed story and keep the energy up from day one all the way to day 18. And now the next jump will be, okay, day one to day 52, and how to stay consistent. The more days you go, the more consistency you have to worry about and things of that nature. It wasn't really hard, like, storytelling-wise at all. It was just, for the most part, the actual production and structure of it are the things that you got to be careful of, because 99% of the people on the reading, other than Monique, these were new filmmakers. Everybody's from Houston except for Monique and Lee that has something to do with this film. Everyone. So this was a new level for everyone, down from me all the way down to the PAs. Everyone was from Houston, and this was the first project they had worked on for of this magnitude.
So how do you get everybody in your city working on this film to share your vision and to do whatever they can to the max to fulfill it, to make it happen?
Be totally honest with them. Have my first meeting with everyone involved, I was just really, really clear. I'm new to this as well. I'm a student of this. The only thing I expect from everybody is for everybody to do their best. This is what I'm trying to do. Can you help me achieve it? Because I can't do it by myself. It was total honesty of, I'm going to make mistakes, but I believe in it, and I believe in you guys. I don't, because a lot of people are like, well, I haven't. I'm like, well, I'm not worried about what you haven't done before this point. I see something in you at this point that I believe that I need to complete the vision that you know, God has given me. And so it was just really about being honest with them, to where I'm a student of this as well. This is a new stake. I'm just as scared as you are. You know what I'm saying? So let's just do this together, keep a positive attitude, and just move forward. And everybody clicked in immediately.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the film. It's about a widow, played by Monique. She has a book that comes out called Invasion, which talks about a family tragedy. And then pick it up from there.
So she, a year prior to, she went through a tragedy where her entire family was killed, and she has written this book. And the book is just explaining everything that went on in the home that particular night that everything happened. So we pick it up right after that, where Monique is telling the story of what happened. That's how the movie comes on. Well, after this particular, after she gets off of the show that she is telling the story on, her sister-in-law, who's also her PR, tells her to up book sales. She wants to do a medium reading to show that Monique is open to something that's going on something in the afterlife, something further than what death can bring. So they want to do a medium reading, but they think that the medium reading is fake and it's just a PR stunt, just something to do to get video on and put it out to the world to boost book sales. So they contact this young lady. Her name is Sky Brown. Her boyfriend and also her two friends do these medium readings for people at their school campus to make a little money here. And they invite them to this now home that Monique has fortified to do this supposedly fake medium reading. It just so happens that the young lady, Sky, is a real medium. And in this home, she connects. And they say that something evil comes out in this home that they absolutely did not prepare for. And now they're stuck in a home that they can't get out of.
Incidentally, Sky is played by Chastity Surreal. I hope I have that right. And what do you think about that? That you may be, you have a budding star, a breakout star perhaps out of this.
Yeah, this cast did amazing all the way around between Chastity Surreal and Denisha Hardiman. They really embodied the people that I wanted to the character that I wanted to bring. It's amazing the comments that they're getting back, and it's they're actually loving it. We'll be in South by Southwest this week. We'll be in Austin this week while the South by Southwest events are going on. We're doing a Q&A this weekend, and we're actually answering all the questions. So they've been super excited because of all of the attention and love that they've been getting from their performances.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's get to the main performance. Let's get to Monique. What was it like working with her? You know, we've always known her one way or another as a larger-than-life performer, comedian, talk show host. But, you know, in Precious, we saw a far different side of her that was really amazing to see. And it looks like in this film, again, we see another side of her, especially as she, for the first time, gets into a genre flavor or genre mood.
Yes. Yeah, it was nothing less. Monique is an amazing talent, and there is nothing at this point that I think that she can't do. Now I'm waiting on Marvel or somebody to pick her up and put her in a movie so she can go ahead hit the superhero genre. It was a really humbling experience because not only did she teach me about directing and how I want to be as a director, because honestly, when you go into this and you meet these stars, you think that they're going to be one way or another. But Monique was really open to listening to what my vision was, which really gave me the foundation of, okay, you do know what you're doing, because to direct somebody of this high caliber and she's listening, okay, this is generally the standard. And just being on set and her being nurturing to the other cast members, if they miss a beat, she's helping them out. She was on set even when it wasn't time for her to be on set. So if we had to do opposites and Monique didn't necessarily have to be in a room, she would stay in a room to do her line so that the cast member have something to feed into. So she was just, it was just a joy, you know what I'm saying, working with her at that particular time.
Mm-hmm. We are speaking with the producer, writer, and director of BET Plus's new attraction, The Reading. It's a made-for-TV movie starring Monique, executive produced by Lee Daniels. Courtney Glowdy is that producer, writer, director. And you can see that film tomorrow night on BET. And that will be tomorrow night, March 14th. And again, if you're in the area of South by Southwest, the area of Austin, Texas, they'll be doing a special event apart from SWSW this weekend. Courtney joins live from Houston, Texas this half hour on Tawabi Televised. And if you have a question or comment or remaining minutes with him, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up at the top of the hour, classic trivia question of the week. Second of the week, we're offering this question and the prize for getting the correct answer. And then after the top of the hour, my thoughts about the Oscars last night on ABC, the highlights and the lowlights. And you might be surprised at both. And we want to give you the chance to chime in with your thoughts as well. That's coming up at the top of the hour right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. You mentioned that you already have your second project up and going. What's that project?
So I have another feature film. It's titled Love, that we are in pre-production on right now. We plan on shooting in September, but I'm still doing a lot of things on pre-production. I'm kind of taking this film way slower than I did The Reading, now that I have a bigger scale to work with. The Reading was totally an independent film. So at that point, you know, with independent filmmaking, you have to make do with what you have versus now I have the option to go with a bigger production company to match with me to create it. So we're excited to get this thing going. And I think it's going to be something good for Houston to have a film of this scale because I plan on doing it here as well. But it's a drama and also with the thriller feel to it. And so we're just moving into pre-production now.
Because of the relationship with BET Plus, do you see yourself getting into episodic television at some point, either directing episodes or executive producing your own series?
Yeah, I definitely see myself directing my own series. I have a couple of ideas in mind. That's definitely one of the things that's on the table that I'm discussing with them over there. So we've actually been talking about that for probably like the last week or so. So it's definitely something that I'm interested in for sure.
Well, what kind of series would you like to do?
I have two in mind. I want to do a crime series, but the other, I'm really interested in kind of doing like a sci-fi horror series as well. That's really, really, really itching. I've been dealing into it. I love what Peele is doing. So I want to take a crack at that side as well, but in a series format.
Is Jordan Peele one of your role models? And if so, why? And who else is like a role model for you, either as a writer, a producer, or a director?
So my favorite filmmakers that have inspired me to do it have been M. Night Shyamalan, you know, Wes Cravens and the Spike Lees. But I'm really, really I actually love what Tyler Perry has done and the impact that he's made. So I'm a fan of filmmaking. So what Jordan is doing, Jordan opened up the door to give people an eye on doing something different other than what we're normally seeing. So I love him for opening that door and taking the ceiling off of what is expected from us. But I'm a fan of all of even down to like the Ryan Cooglers and not down to, but the newer comers like the Ryan Cooglers. I actually have a possible cousin that I love watching her work, Sierra Glade as well. So I'm a fan of most, most filmmakers give me something new because I'm a study of the art.
Guess what, Courtney, I think we have a call. We're going to take it. Hello, you're on Tomorrow Be Televised. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hello?
Yes, hello, you're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Oh, my name is Bob from Dallas. I just wanted to ask Courtney, you know, when you I caught the top of the show and you ran through how you got Monique Lee Daniels and it sounded real simple, but I've been making films and trying to get somebody involved. How hard was it to really get those people involved, or was it as easy as you just said and you just got the Midas touch? Thank you.
That person right there, that's Rob. He's something's wrong with him. But that's the manager Rob that I was speaking of. That it's not the Midas touch. It's basically like a fate driven thing. Monique, it wasn't difficult getting Monique at all, Rob. It's just reaching out. I think that, like as I said earlier, like I think that people are fearful to do things and reach out. And I think that whatever you sow into, you're going to generally achieve. And as Rob knows me, I don't really take no for an answer anyway. So it's not difficult at all to get whatever you want. You just have to put the effort into it. And I think because of the lack of education of how to reach out to these people, you just start. There is Instagram. There is LinkedIn now. Some of those accounts, especially on like LinkedIn and IMDb Pro, man, go on those accounts and look at the people and reach out to the people that you're interested in. It's honestly that simple at the end of the day. And reach out as much as possible. They have a million people that are emailing them. I was just blessed in this particular situation to get the right email at the right time and know, at this point, let God connect. Hang up on him, though, because he there's somebody else in.
By the way, Bob, from Dallas, before you leave us, I should point out that Texas has really become a wonderful TV and film production hub over the years, and also a great way to showcase television. South by Southwest has a lot of TV projects coming up that they're showing, and they also have like 7 or 8 independently made TV pilots that they're also showcasing, starting last weekend and continuing into this week. Also, one of my favorite broadcast television shows of recent years, American Crime from John Ridley, was made in Texas, at least for the first 2 seasons, and was a terrific show. So there's a lot of good stuff going on in Texas in the TV and the filmmaking scene.
Yeah, we're growing. We just got to get to Texas to be able to compete with the other cities. That's one of the biggest things. Foundation-wise, when it comes down to the looks and the landscaping, we have everything. Everything from the Reading was shot. We have sheep and we got camels in the Reading, if you pay attention to one of the first shots. We can do anything. It's really the taxes that really hurt us a lot, because at the end of the day, why would you come down to Texas when you can go to a Louisiana or an Atlanta and get such a good tax break on filming your project there? I think that's realistically the only thing that holds us back from really growing and competing in this league against those cities and those states.
Mm-hmm. I want to thank Bob from Dallas for calling us. Thank you for tuning us in. Thank you for your question. It was really great. Bob from Dallas calling us right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. So before we leave you, Courtney, how do you see your career progressing? Ultimately, what do people should know about, like, what's your mindset about making it in film, making it in television, whichever way your career goes?
I'm going to proceed cautiously and creatively. I'm not really into jumping into the commercial world. I love story. I'm a huge character-driven storytelling fanatic. I am a film fanatic, so I want to be labeled as one of the best. So I'm going to cautiously to do that.
The film is called The Reading. It is BET Plus's latest made-for-television movie. It stars Monique, executive produced by Lee Daniels, and produced, written, and directed by our guest this last half hour, Courtney Glaude. And incidentally, if you are not getting BET Plus, which is available on smart TV sets, smart devices, and multi-channel bundles, you can see the film tomorrow night, that's tomorrow, March 14th, on BET. Check the locations where BET is available in your area, on cable or satellite. For more details about the film online, go to www.bet.plus, that's www.bet.plus, or bet.com or bet.net. And again, for those of you in the Texas area, you can catch a special event of The Reading this coming weekend. So maybe check BET Plus and bet.com for all the details. Courtney Glaude, thank you again very much. Congratulations on stepping into the TV field with The Reading. All the best to Monique and Lee Daniels as well. And we'd love to keep in track about any other TV projects you do. So as you keep going and growing in TV and film, we'd love to have you back anytime. It has been a great pleasure having you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's appreciated.
You're welcome, Courtney. And all the very best with your career and the film and everything coming your way. That's really, really great. Take care. All the greatest.
You take care.
Courtney Glaude joining us live from Houston, Texas. Now time for our classic trivia question of the week. Second week we're offering the question. And if you're first with the correct answer, you'll win the best-selling book, 7 Ways to Become a Famous Doctor, by Roland Perez. He is the host of the popular PBS series America's Health Journal. There's also a 24/7 service on smart TV sets, smart devices, multi-channel bundles near you. And here is the question. Name the 1985 ABC series starring Jamie Rose as an unorthodox detective. Name the 1985 ABC series starring Jamie Rose as an unorthodox detective. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. So if you get to enclose your name and where you're emailing from, first with the right answer, you win. And if you are a previous winner or you are a WTV guest, means you're not eligible. Sorry about that. It's always trying to get new people playing the game. And if we don't get a winner by the end today, we'll post the question tomorrow on Facebook and Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. That's Facebook at Simon Applebaum and Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. Remember, in order to win, play in, and all the very best. And if we have time, we'll repeat the question toward the end of our program. When we come back, our final half hour, it's all about the Oscars last night on ABC. How did it do? What were the highlights and what were the lowlights? You must be surprised what I say about it, and we want to give you the opportunity to say what you think. So give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room. We'll get to all things Oscar after we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, Spreaker.com, and Tune.com. Together, reaching over 80 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Check out What's the Buzz and Why. That's tomorrow at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific. It's one of BTR's most popular shows, What's the Buzz and Why, originating right here in the Big Apple. Tomorrow, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific, right here exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, you can catch BTR 24/7, best of it, on YouTube.com. Welcome back to our final half hour of Tomorrow Be Televised, and welcome to those of you just joining us at the top of the hour. Simon Applebaum here along for the ride with you. It's a beautiful Monday in many parts of the country, not so much here in New York. Very gray skies. We've had rain on and off since last night, 43 degrees at the top of the hour. And we want to hear from you about the Academy Awards last night, whether you watched or didn't watch them, and if so, why. If you did, what you thought were the highlights and the lowlights and the thing overall. And we want to hear from you. And how do you get involved with us? You give us a call. Here's the number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. If you're shy about the phone, use our chat room. It's available for business right now. It's Simon Apple 04. There you go. Simon Apple 04 is the name of the chat room. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. So use the phone or the room. Either way, we want to hear you, and we'll be interactive with you as well. And remember, throughout this final half hour, you can connect to others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Screen, follow the instructions, and me live with you. The Academy Awards, edition 95, was on ABC last night. It ran 3 hours and 36 minutes, and by the end of the night, Everything, Everywhere, All at Once won 7 Academy Awards, including Best Picture, Best Actress Michelle Yeoh, both supporting actress, actor and actress categories, and Best Director and Writer as well, for that wonderful pair of people behind the making of the film. All Quiet on the Western Front was in second place with 4 Oscars, including Best International Foreign Language Film. That means 4 Oscars for Netflix, which also won the Best Animated Film Award for Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio. Let me give you some context before I give you my thoughts about the highlights and lowlights, the context of where this Oscars stood in terms of views. Incidentally, again, at the top of the hour, we still do not know the initial Nielsen result in terms of viewership for this program. And a lot of people are looking at this because for a lot of people in the TV industry, this was a make or break for the Academy Awards. Because over the last decade, the Oscars, which used to have 40, 50 million people watching, 2 years ago had its all-time low, 10 million people. As a matter of fact, the early data from Nielsen showed it was less than 10 million. And if it wasn't for the revised data, it would have been the first ever single-digit award show of that nature, the big one for film. Last year, in part because of the celebrated slap incident with Will Smith and Chris Rock, it went up to 16 million. So there was a lot of interest in terms of what the viewership was going to be. Was it going to move up or was it going to go back down? And if it's going back down, how much? And there were a lot of factors behind this. First of all, this is the first Oscars, I believe, that was scheduled the first day and night of daylight savings time. And usually there is some confusion from some viewers about what time it is, if they haven't set the clocks ahead an hour the night before. Secondly, it's the first Academy Awards that was scheduled for NCAA Selection Sunday, the day that we find out who is going to be in the NCAA Men and Women's College Basketball Tournament. So you have all those bracketology Selection Sunday shows that start at 6 o'clock on CBS, ESPN, etc., that cut into the Oscars pre-show that started on 6:30 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on ABC, and ran throughout the ceremony on various networks. And then there was the decision by HBO and HBO Max to play the first season finale of The Last of Us, a series that has become the talk of the TV world, where the previous Sunday night, it had 8.1 million people watching, their all-time high. So the question would be, how would the final episode do? which, unlike the Super Bowl, was not played late Friday night or late Friday and then rerun on Sunday. They actually ran the new episode last night. So did a new episode of the popular Hallmark Channel series, The Way Home, starring Andie MacDowell, who was, by the way, one of the presenters at the Academy Awards last night. And there was an XFL game that was scheduled late by ESPN2. So with all that, you wondered, how would the Oscars turn out? Well, here's my thoughts about what in fact did turn out. And I'm going to start with the highlights and then get to the lowlights. The first highlight, and it was a beauty. It was fantastic to see that the majority of acceptance speeches, particularly every acceptance speech by everybody who won for Everything, Everywhere, All at Once, from the writer-directors to the Best Supporting Actor, Kate Wan, probably one of the great, great comeback stories of all time in film and TV, Jamie Lee Curtis, Michelle Yeoh, et cetera. Every single one of those acceptance speeches was on spot. It wasn't about making political statements. It wasn't about making political diatribes. It wasn't turning into a political soapbox or a soapbox of any kind. It was being gratitude to everybody who made the film, gratitude to parents and family, gratitude to the audience that saw the film and the production company A24 that backed it. And most importantly, empowering the home audience to love film and to take these characters to heart and see the movie. And it was wonderful to see. Every single acceptance speech for this film was incredibly and moving and poignant and lovely. And that fit what has been missing from the Oscars for a long time, which is the whole idea of an award show, as I've said a number of times on this program and other places, is twofold. One is to honor the art, no matter what the art is. And secondly, most importantly, to engage the people at home to get involved with the art, to support it, to see it in person for themselves. And that, I'm happy to say, everybody who accepted that award for everybody, Everything, Everywhere, All at Once, and the other films, too, that were winning to do that. And that was a fantastic, fantastic highlight. Second highlight, Lady Gaga's performance of the nominated song from Top Gun Maverick, Hold My Hand. The news reports were saying, particularly from the entertainment websites like The Hollywood Reporter and Variety and so forth, Lady Gaga is going to be in attendance, but she's not going to sing. Guess what? She showed up, and she sang that song. And thanks to a stroke of genius by the director, Glenn Weiss, who may be the best director of musical sequences ever, it was the musical moment of live television so far this year. Taking a close-up attitude, sort of like a mini John Frankenheimer. Remember John Frankenheimer, the director who loved close-ups in every one of his movies, from The Manchurian Candidate to 7 Days in May and so on, and his wonderful miniseries for TNT, George Wallace, I might add. It was a thing of beauty. It was like cinema verite happening live before your eyes. And as a result, the song was a from-the-gut performance by Lady Gaga. It's the second time in recent years that Weiss and Gaga have teamed up for a magical musical moment. The first one was Shallow from A Star is Born, the latest remake. And that was done with one camera, all, you know, moving throughout the song beautifully, subtly. The close-ups were fantastic. And I love the particular close-up, which started with her arm grabbing her body and then rising up to her face. And I loved the instrumentation. It was wonderful, small musical group, just terrific. I think it's the best musical moment of the year on live television. And I credit that to Lady Gaga and Glenn Weiss, the director. Beautiful work, beautiful camera, and all the camera people involved. Beautiful camera work. Another super highlight. Third highlight, a really terrific demonstration of how you inventively showcase a technical award. In this case, Best Cinematography. The presenters were terrific, and they showed you how cinematography can work, unique shots. And for that, they used two geniuses, Spike Lee's cinematographer, Ernest Dickinson, on films like Do the Right Thing and Malcolm X, and the brilliant Greg Tolan, whose work in the 30s and 40s included his Oscar for Wuthering Heights, Citizen Kane, in my mind still the best American movie ever made, by one of the best directors ever, Orson Welles, The Pride of the Yankees, which was on Turner Classic Movies, part 31 Days of Oscar, a few nights ago, The Best Years of Our Lives, which he should have won the Oscar for, and others. It was great to see the masters being celebrated and what they did to educate a new generation and people watching at home. This was a marvelous, marvelous, inventive, easy way, without dumbing it down for the home audience, about how to present a technical category on television. By the way, the category is won by the cinematographer on All Quiet for the Western Front. And then there was the song from RRR, Natu Natu. It won the best song. The performance was terrific. Now, the song, not that really great. I like Slumdog Millionaire's Tejo better. However, the dancing and the choreography made that song fly. In the film, and to their credit of everybody, the dancers in the movie were on the stage last night, and they were joyful and amazing, and it was fantastic. And again, these were covered by Glenn Weiss and his camera people. The choreography really makes the film, and it makes that song. And I think the choreography, and by the way, this is also proof, the latest proof, that the Academy Awards must do a Best Choreography Award. It's ridiculous it isn't. The choreography for West Side Story by Justin Peck, adapted from Jerome Robbins' work, should have been nominated and should have won last year. La La Land, Mandy Moore's work 5 years ago. Why don't we have a Best Choreography Oscar? It was really sensational. And Natu Natu, I just love those dancers and their joy and their spirit. It just reached right into the home screen. So that was another wonderful highlight. Unfortunately, the lowlights screwed this show. The problem was that every single time that the Oscars were in a groove, I want to give one more highlight, and that was a great call by the producers to pair the supporting actor, actress awards together in the same sequence. Not take one, go to a commercial break, or take one, supporting actor, actress, and then a half hour later do the other one. It was both done at the same time, and it worked. And it led to those wonderful speeches by Ki-Won Hong and Guan and Jamie Lee Curtis. Really, really marvelous. And I'm thrilled for that standing ovation, by the way, for Ki-Hoon Won. Incidentally, not only was he one of the stars of The Goonies, he was also in a CBS television series with D. Wallace Stone of E.T. fame. It was originally called Together We Stand and then called Nothing Is Easy. It ran about a year. It started off good in the ratings with Elliot Gould as the co-star. Then Gould was pulled out. They then went to Nothing Is Easy, kept another like 10 or 12 episodes going, and then was canceled. And then he left television, went into film production, and then came back to acting with Everything Everywhere All at Once. It's a fantastic story. I'm thrilled with the standing ovation he got. Great move to pair the two. And also another great move was to have the first award be the animation award, given the fact that this would be the time the kids and families would be watching together if they were watching the Oscars. Great move. That should stay. And so should the supporting actor and actress. And we should see more of that maybe if the Oscars continue from here on in to Dish 96 and beyond. Now, the lowlights. Here's the problem and why the show, in my opinion, deserved a D-minus in spite of all these wonderful highlights. Because every time that the Oscars were starting to get into a groove, something stupid happened. One of the reasons why the Oscars, two reasons why the Oscars got the low ratings over the last decade is because of inside baseball jokes that did not make any sense to the home audience. Maybe made sense to the people in the theater, not to the home audience. Went over their heads. And people acting stupid. And we saw a lot of that last night. And it starts with Jimmy Kimmel. I love Jimmy Kimmel. I love his wonderful skewering of TV every May when ABC and now Disney does their upfront event here in New York. You got to remember when Jimmy Kimmel does that, and it's a very funny, crazy, you know, dead-on-target humor. It's done before an industry crowd. That's different from doing the same kind of jokes where you have a home audience, millions of people watching, who if they don't know what the heck you're talking about, they will turn you off. And that's what happened. His monologue was atrocious. It went way too long. The jokes were flying over the head like crazy. I thought his handling of John Williams was atrocious. I thought his comments after Paul Rogers won the film editing Oscar for Everything Everywhere All at Once was sickening. And I also thought how he handled the Robert Blake situation was insensitive and disgusting. How dare you do that? I get that Robert Blake is not the most well-loved person around, but I'll tell you, he was a wonderful actor, and he deserved to be in that In Memoriam tribute. I'll get to more of that later. And for Jimmy Kimmel to do what he did, that's disgusting. He just, every single time he was on the air, he just lowered the boom on the crowd, and people were probably turning off their sets. It's the worst performance I've seen Kimmel give. He was atrocious all night long. And that the thing in the audience and throwing out the donkey. And by the way, the donkey was not from that film, The Banshees of whatever. Just awful. Absolutely awful. He pulled the show down. And that's the first of the lowlights. Second lowlight. The Oscars had a great opportunity. Second lowlight was, ironically, the best song nominee from Everything Everywhere All at Once. I'll put it bluntly, it was amateur night. Very unprofessional performance. David Byrne and everyone on that stage sounded off key. They didn't know what the heck they were doing. Too much white lighting. Somebody should have said in rehearsal, we cannot run this number the way it is. And awful, one of the worst production numbers I have seen on any Oscar telecast in the last decade. It was amateur night, all the way. Shocked at David Byrne. He was off key from the get-go, and everybody else was too. And it sounded like wailing. It didn't sound like a song. It sounded like wailing, screeching. The dancers didn't know what the heck they were doing. They were bathed too much in white lighting. I thought it was dangerous at times. It was awful. So that's low light number two. Now, low light number three. The Oscars had a marvelous, marvelous opportunity to celebrate the 100th anniversary of Warner Brothers and Walt Disney. And what did we get? We got a ripoff. Instead of a 4 or 5 minute retrospective of the great moments of film from one of the great master entrepreneurs of film and entertainment, Walt Disney, what did we get? A trailer for The Little Mermaid. A trailer for The Little Mermaid. And what do we get for Warner Brothers, their 100th anniversary? We got a promo for the Warner Brothers 100th anniversary salute on Turner Classic Movies next month that ran less than a minute. You mean to tell me, and film audiences, film lovers out there, that you can't devote 5 minutes or 4 minutes to a retrospective of some of the greatest movies ever made from both of these organizations, celebrating the 100th birthday? Walt Disney had the triple turning over in his grave. And the Warner Brothers, same thing. Moronic. Absolutely moronic. What an opportunity, what a most blown opportunities you could have. You don't get the opportunity to celebrate 100 years of two of the greatest film studios in the same year. Absolutely horrifying. And then there was some of the presenters, like Hugh Grant. What an embarrassment. When he presented his technical award with Andy McDowell, had to be horrified. And then there was another big low light, which was Elizabeth Banks and the cocaine bear. What an embarrassing sight. That cocaine bear should have been taken off the stage. You know, Elizabeth Banks, I believe, is the host of Press Your Luck on ABC. Somebody should have gotten the whammy signal and gotten the whammies animated, you know, to take that cocaine bear off the air. Off the stage. And finally, In Memoriam. Lenny Kravitz did a wonderful performance, a really terrific song, was right on spot. And to give credit to Glenn Weiss, the director, I think he tried very, very hard. In recent years, the In Memoriam had the crazy, how do we make the performance work with the on screen? And I think he did a very good job with the dissolving and so forth. And once again, the Oscars showed that they cannot get the content for In Memoriam down. First of all, why did Angela Lansbury didn't have a clip from her brilliant performance, Oscar nominated The Manchurian Candidate? Why were some of the other actors not given clips? But more importantly, why were a lot of actors not mentioned? We're talking people like not just Robert Blake, but Anne Hecht, Tom Sizemore, Philip Baker Hall, and we're hearing more and more on Twitter today about the actors. Are you crazy? Who is putting these In Memoriam together? I've said this before, and I'll say it again. What the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences should do is contact Turner Classic Movies and get the who do the Turner Classic Movies Remembers segment every year and get them to do this. I promise you, you will not have a problem with not having people represented. None. And you'll have a great – Jacqueline Stewart, the host of Silent Sunday Nights, who's the wonderful president of the Academy Museum, should be on the call with Turner Classic Movies immediately to get them to do this. It is a disgrace. And we're hearing more and more about actors who should have been in that segment and were not. And I'm sorry, QR code to get those people who passed on. And it's a shame because I thought the segment was terrific and John Travolta was heartfelt about Olivia and John. I loved his reference to his work with Olivia in Greece, the hopelessly devoted comment, the aside. It was wonderful. And I thought it was, in terms of visually, the best In Memoriam segment in a long time. It's the segment itself that was lousy. So all told, bottom line, more highlights than I thought going in. I've got to be honest, more highlights. And I think that the Academy did take a leap forward in terms of cutting down the baloney, particularly the political soapbox baloney that has turned off a lot of viewers. However, they did not take out the inside the baseball baloney that screwed this show up big time. So overall, I give the show a D-. A-plus for the acceptance speeches. A-plus for everything was done by Everything Everywhere All at Once. A-plus for Lady Gaga's performance. A for the choreography in the RRR number. Minus for Jimmy Kimmel's work, start to finish. And D- for the ceremony overall. I don't know how this is going to go. I really don't know how this is going to go with the viewers. Because for all the great highlights, and there were many great highlights, there were far more lowlights that turned the audience off. And I really, really hope that ABC and the Academy will do a lot of soul searching. I think the new management, by the way, headed by Janet Yang, is on track here. And let's hope that they really get their act together. I hope they get another chance to make it right. I really do. Because, unfortunately, given the fact that we are now in an era where the Screen Actors Guild is off broadcast in cable television, it will be on Netflix starting next year, it was on YouTube this year, the Film Independent Spirit Awards, which, again, Everything Everywhere All at Once did very, very well. I think it won 6 awards that night. It was off broadcast in cable for the first time ever. Golden Globes will probably not be on NBC or broadcast TV anymore. Other award shows may be in danger as well. We will see. I will say this. Emmy Award people, take note. You're next because you've already had low single-digit ratings, single-digit viewership, excuse me, and you're coming off a terrible show last year. You can't do it again because you're going to be on Netflix or Hulu or somewhere else, but you're going to be off broadcast to cable for good if this show in September does not work well. So take a lesson from the Oscar people, and let's make a great show, shall we? Great. And one more thing. To Glenn Weiss and Lady Gaga, love your work together. Do a special together, a musical concert special together. It would be a fantastic television moment. All right, I want to hear from you. We're coming down to like 5 minutes to go in the show, so we can take a phone call if we can or a chat room thing. So give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And one more time, we're waiting. Let's give you one more time our classic trivia question Again, if you're first with the correct answer, you'll win the brand-new best-selling book, 7 Ways to Become a Famous Doctor by Roland Perez of America's Health Journal Hosting Fame. The question, named the 1985 ABC series starring Jamie Rose as an unorthodox detective. Name the 1985 ABC series starring Jamie Rose as an unorthodox detective. You know the answer? Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Please include your name and where you're emailing from. First with the correct answer, you win. If we don't get a win by the end today, post the question tomorrow on Facebook and Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. So all the greatest. Get in there and win today. We'd love to have you as our new Classic Trivia winner. Incidentally, if you are a previous winner or a guest on this program, you are not eligible. Everybody else, jump in. Do your best, and all the very best. Thank you to both of our guests for being here today. Loved having them and love having you listening to them and your reaction to them. We are back on Thursday with our second of 3 episodes this week. Keep posted on our Facebook and Twitter pages to let you know who the guests are. And then coming up on Friday, an exclusive interview with one of the key people working with former NBA superstar Kevin Garnett on his brand-new network, Veeam TV. His name is Josh Otten, and he's also the CEO of a company that is working on a network that is already up and running on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. And a week from today on Tomorrow Be Televised, one of our guests will be the chief executive officer of a very unique service called Rewarded.TV that's also running on smart TV sets and devices. His name is Krish Arapalli. That's Krish Arapalli from Rewarded.TV. Wait to hear what they're doing and the programming that you can be rewarded for watching. That's coming up next Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We Televise. And one more time, I want to thank our brand-new podcast affiliates for joining us over the last couple of weeks. That's Audacy, former CBS Radio and Entercom, Podbeam, Player at Player.fm, and PodcastWise. All you tuning in on those websites and those podcast platforms, thank you for doing so. Tell your friends to keep tuning in. And if there is a website that or podcast site that's not taking our show, let us know. We'll do negotiating with them. Again, came in late on today's program. Want to catch up an episode you missed? Go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out our website anytime you like, 24/7, tomorrowbetelevised.com. It's tomorrowbetelevised.com. And again, love to hear from you. What do you think about our guest today? What's your thoughts about TV's future, including a possibility of the metaverse becoming a major part of television? And your thoughts about the Oscars, too, last night on ABC. Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. And however you respond, we respond back to you within 24 hours. Why? Because what you say matters now more than ever. And by the way, congratulations to all the Academy Award winners and nominees last night. The views expressed are those of the participants. They are not those of Blog Talk Radio and other services of this program. Andy Toe is BeatStars General Manager. Dave Sonnenberg is Head of Content. Website service provided by On Podium, the Internet's new podcast outpost. Guitar Spakus is our web coordinator. For Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a wonderful rest of your Monday. Hang in with the rain and maybe the snow where you're in the New York metropolitan area. Particularly upstate New York, where they're expecting a lot of snow tonight and tomorrow. We're back on Thursday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, and all of our fantastic podcast platform destinations. Whatever you're doing to now and then, please make it safe. Please make it great, not only for you, but for others you love too. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.